Well, five star chef Ivan Flowers. I'm so stuck in this cabbage thing that I can't even say his name, but five star chef Ivan Flowers is back on Big Blend Radio Champagne Sunday show today to teach us how to make his vegan and gluten-free stuffed cabbage recipe. So we are stuffing cabbage, we are playing in the cabbage patch, and we are drinking champagne. Can you tell? But you can see Chef Ivan's recipes in Big Blend Radio and TV magazine. Just go to blendradioandtv.com. He is in our expert department. You'll see a link to all his interviews and recipes. He also teaches a biweekly cooking class series on the Celebrity Cafe. You can go to thecelebritycafe.com. And if you are in the restaurant industry in any side, shape, or form of it, in San Diego County, Southern California, he also works with restaurateurs in teaching them how to do media, how to work the back and the front of the house, and maybe also stuff your cabbage. But anyway, you can keep up with Chef Ivan's on Facebook. How are you, Chef?
I'm good. How are you, Nancy, Lisa?
Well, you can tell we're in high spirits, high form here, because we're in our cabbage patch playing with our cabbage patch dolls, and we're ready to stuff our cabbage.
This is good.
I know. This is bad. But now, okay, you chose this recipe. You decided to make it vegan, gluten-free, and then I'm thinking, is the cabbage part because it's also good fiber for us?
Well, yes, a lot of fiber, and you know how I feel about that, you know, but that's a whole other show. I'm very into fiber, and you know that Tracy's a vegetarian, so, you know, we did this recipe, and she had a lot to do with this, and it actually came out vegan, gluten-free, which covers a lot of bases, you know, so it's like, wow, this is, like, more healthy than we thought. So we were looking to make it healthy, but we made it super healthy, but the thing with, you know, a lot of times it's super healthy is, you know, is the taste going to be there? Taste this year and then some.
And that's the thing, I think, when you look at, you know, everyone's got some kind of health thing these days where we can eat this, we can't eat that, you know, unless you're Anthony Bourdain, who probably lives on antibiotics every time he comes home. And that other dude that goes around eating really bizarre stuff. There's something like, if it's gluten that we have to watch out, maybe it is, you know, dairy and meat products. And some of us just really, you know, want to stay away from that just out of the environmental concerns, or sometimes it's spiritual. It doesn't matter what it is. But the reality is, when things start getting taken away from your diet ingredients, then you start to panic, because you still want to have a good meal. That is one of our things about being a human being, is enjoying our food and not eating it completely pure on survival, right? This is part of society. This is part of our culture. So good food is important. Yeah.
Yes. Good fresh food, absolutely.
Now, before we get into stuffing our cabbage and learning how to make this yummy dish, speaking of vegetables and choices of vegetables, on Facebook today, one of our friends, the Candy Queen, wants me to ask you about watermelon radishes and what you equate them to. So what's happening with the watermelon radishes? And what are watermelon radishes?
They look like big green golf balls. And then when you you cut into them, it kind of has like a Grateful Dead T-shirt look. They're really they look like a watermelon rainbow, and depending on the radish, some of the colors are just white and some of them go to purple and magenta and just incredible. You want to make sure you always peel them. They're not as strong as other radishes. Most of them are used for garnish, because they make a beautiful garnish. If you do want to use them, let's say you're cooking with them and you're in a professional restaurant, the trick with radishes is once you cut them and you put them in a bowl or whatever, they start to emit a gas and they start to smell very, very strong. So sometimes you'll get a radish that's kind of like, you know, it's putting out a very strong odor, and that takes away from the taste. The trick with radishes is, let's say you're cutting them and you're using them in saute or whatever, is you want to put them in ice water 3 times. You want to wash them in ice cold ice water, and you want to put lemon in. And then through the night, they will stay really, really fresh and crisp. If you're going to carry them to the next day, you change out all the water and you put ice in it, and you carry it to the next day. With watermelon radish, your water is going to turn almost pink purple. They're going to put out a lot of color, especially the third time you change them. So they're also good for frying. If you dry them up, they make a great chip. If you're really thin and you go into a fryer. They're also good in sautés, but again, it's like, you know, you have to know how to work with radishes. But they're good. They're really good.
So why is this making me giggle? Why do I feel like a three-year-old right now getting the giggles? Because you're talking about gas and, you know, changing them out every 3 days or whatever. Like
changing diapers.
Well,
yeah, why am I getting the giggles?
Same.
I mean,
it's the same thing with cabbage,
ball.
Right? Yeah, they're gassy. They put out a lot of gas, and, you know, if they're gassy vegetables, you have to know how to work with them. I can't tell you how many times people have eaten radishes on a salad, or they weren't held correctly, or, you know, a lot of places will just cut them to order, and they get this hit of, boy, this tastes off. Well, it's more the
smell,
the smell that you're getting than the radish itself. But that's just the kind of vegetable they are.
Oh, now that's something to talk about, because the whole smell of things can put you off your food. Like, I mean, there's that fruit that smells like dead, rotting flesh, right? But cabbage can stink. And there's it can. And it can make you feel like, okay, am I eating something from the bathroom? But so with your dish, the stuffed cabbage, but it's a true thing. I mean, if you're not decorating it well, maybe, I mean, how do you get past that cabbage smell? I mean, so that it is appetizing to eat.
It depends what, you know, you're preparing. Let's say you're doing a coleslaw. You're putting vinegar in, you're putting a touch of sugar, that's your gastrique, mayonnaise, or you're pickling it, different things. Cabbage will start to put out an odor, not that first day, as it goes maybe into the second day or the third day, but by then you usually eat it. If you hold it too long, it's going to remind you that it's in the refrigerator. it's just something that you have to know how to work with. Basically, when you're working with cabbage, if you follow some, you know, simple instructions, it's not going to get to that point where it's going to put out that odor.
Is that why they call it
very,
gastrique?
Very
I'm sorry. You said gastrique.
As in gas. Very good. Very good. And remember, a lot of people that eat cabbage, like, for example, some people will eat sauerkraut, you know, and they'll get a reaction, or different cabbages, because it's a very gassy vegetable, you know.
But
some
gassy
people
is good
eat
for
it,
you.
Some people can't eat them. Yeah.
Oh, that's why they call that one dish in England bubble and squeak.
Yeah. All right.
It's true.
You see what happens. You see, this, we shouldn't ask questions like this, because then we do turn into three-year-olds, but that just shows how our real mentality is around here. But okay, so anyway, beyond the squeaks and the bubbles and the gastriques, the sauerkraut thing, I do want to touch on that, because it is really good, but is it better to make it ourselves? Because sometimes you see this stuff, it's almost like pickles in the grocery store that, you know, are pumped through with, you know, sulfites and salts and stuff, where you can make better pickles at home. You can do your own sauerkraut.
You know, I'm a big believer in anytime you make it yourself, you're controlling it. Anytime anything is in a box, anytime it's in a jar, anytime it's in a can, it has been processed to the point where it's up to be, you know, put up there for a longer period of time. So preservatives and chemicals and different things. And the reality is, you know, I was just talking to Tracy this morning. I'm going to be making a bunch of bread and butter pickles and Spears new pickles on Wednesday. And it's so easy and it's so quick that it just amazes me that people will go and they'll buy a pickle. And the way the pickle companies write it is they'll say 400 milligrams of salt for one-third pickle. So I remember I had a student once who had high blood pressure. Remember the big pickles in the little plastic bags that sell in 7-Eleven?
Well,
she had high blood pressure, and I took it and I said, I want to show you something. And the pickle was actually 9 servings, and it was 480 milligrams. So she was getting like 4,000 milligrams of salt from one pickle. The reason for that is that pickle could have sat in that package till the dinosaurs came back. So, yes, make it yourself.
And when we talk about pickle, we're not to be confused with Pickle Your Little Dog.
Yes,
you know,
right here.
Your pickle,
watching TV.
Pickle's clean. Pickle's not full of sulfides and salt. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, I wonder a lot of times if the blood pressure thing, before we start packing, you know, those pills into our bodies, that really look at your diet and start there before you take the almighty pill, because once you start on those pills, you know, I've seen it with a lot of friends, it's hardcore. And it's hardcore to get off of, too, if you're, you know, you do this healthy side. And I understand medical things where you better take it, otherwise you could have a stroke, and there's issues. I'm not a doctor, so I'm not saying don't take your medicine. I'm just saying, as you start feeling that things aren't quite right, maybe the first thing to do is take the pickles off your list that you probably eat every day, and those kinds of things that we don't even realize are basically causing it a lot of times.
Well, the biggest changes in health is what's at the end of the fork. It's always
mm-hmm.
been like that. It's what's at the end of
yeah.
the fork. And unfortunately, we live in a society right now where, you know, it's like, you know, let's order it and, you know, let's pick it up and it's delivered and it's processed and it's done and it's quick and it's easy. And the reality is it's not. You're paying a price for it. So either you're going to cook,
mm-hmm.
take some time to cook, or you're not. And if you're not,
so,
then you're shopping
yeah.
the inside of the aisle, not the outside. You're going to pay a low price for it. Actually, a very big price.
It's true. It's true. I mean, we live once in this body, so hang on to it while you can. And it's fun to make your own food. And I like this, that you've done this vegan, you know, gluten-free stuffed cabbage. So let's start with the cabbage, because that's basically your shell and your main, you know, it's the
mm-hmm.
big cup that you're going to roll up with the stuffing. But can you do this with any kind of cabbage, or do you have a specific kind of cabbage?
You want to use a green cabbage. You don't want to use a Napa cabbage, because a Napa cabbage is very,
okay.
very delicate and will tear and is better for light flaws. You want to do a simple green cabbage. It's as easy as can be. You cut the core out. You cut about 2 inches from the bottom. You wrap it in plastic. You put it in a microwavable dish, 12 minutes. You take it out and let it sit there as you're making the rest of the dish. And that cabbage is then going to steam. And it's going to allow you to then take full leaves off. They'll peel right off, which you put on paper towel to get the excess water off. And there's your vehicle right there for rolling. It's that simple. It's that simple.
Now, could you do this just thinking of like the cup kind of deal? And we'll get into the stuffing, because I can already tell this is probably going to be one of those recipes we can mess with and change up as we want to go. I know this is the signature of Chef Ivan, fresh and change it up, and here's your pathway, you know. Could you do this with artichokes, or would it not work? Like, because I'm still scared of them, okay? And I want to get over the fear of artichokes and try and do something with them. Because, you know, everyone's heard how terrible I am at, I can eat them if someone makes them correctly, but I don't know what I'm doing with them. Could you, or that not make sense because they're like leaves at the, you know what I mean?
I don't see rolling them.
No, not rolling them, but could you make them the cup or no?
You can use the artichoke heart.
Okay.
You know, Tracy just actually said she's writing down boil artichoke. Hollow out stuff, use sauce and bake. So between the leaves.
No, it's not in the middle.
Right, that's, yeah.
But it's stuffed artichoke.
Right.
Same stuff, the same method, and then bake it.
She's saying yes, you know.
Sorry.
She's saying yes. You can.
If Tracy
well,
says yes,
with,
that means
well,
yes.
As you're going to the bottom, you have more of the heart. So
mm-hmm.
the hearts you can stuff. You can stuff artichokes also between the leaves. And then you have the stuffing in the middle and then pull the leaves. Because remember, with the petals, that's what you're eating on an artichoke until you get to the heart. You're taking that petal and you're biting that meat off the bottom. So it's possible. It's a little more work, but it's doable. The hearts are easy. And you could buy artichoke hearts as well. You can also, if you wanted to do the ones that are in the cans, the really good Italian artichokes with the long stem, you can do that. You could stuff it a little bit. You can even wrap a piece of cabbage or carrot or something around that and keep that stuffing in. So there's a lot of ways that you can do it.
And bell peppers. You can do this with bell peppers, I bet, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Bell peppers.
Oh, sure.
Yummy.
Sure.
Stuffed bell peppers. So, okay, so you've got your cabbage ready. You know, Nancy's looking at me like, if you're going to do this, you better do it right.
I'm leaving.
Yeah,
it's dangerous.
She's looking at me like, uh-oh. Oh, by the way. Oh, my gosh, Chef Ivan, I've been dying to tell you, Okay, the pizza thing. Remember last time, and we'll get to the stuffing, everybody, but the pizza thing, last time Chef Ivan was on the show, he was, you know, had a bit of a rant about people that make pizza with, you know, fresh, you know, onions and garlic and mushrooms and don't cook them first and how it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I know there's something weird about it, but that's how I've always seen people do it. So I always do it that way because,
right.
like, I'm a sheep, you know. Bah. Well, I started cooking my topping, and it's
mm-hmm.
just, yeah, dude.
Completely different.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
good.
It's all
it's,
the difference.
It changes
really
everything.
Makes, I mean, the garlic is there. The onions, you can taste it. It's like suddenly you don't need half of what you're putting on the pizza because the flavor is there. So you don't have to put as much seasoned or anything. I mean, it's really, it's better.
So now it's pizza instead of salad on a piece of bread.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. It's really good. But you don't need as much because the taste is there. So you don't have to use as many peppers or as much onion or garlic as I was in the past. And
exactly.
I think my body likes to digest it better this way. I'm just saying.
Yes.
But anyway.
Yes.
Good. I know. It's good. It's really good. Your filling does almost start to sound like a little bit of pizza. This is almost pizza-like. This is a healthier pizza
yes.
thing. You,
well,
you're
the difference,
using butter.
The difference,
go ahead.
The difference here is, you know, you've got your mushrooms, your carrots, your red onions, your red pepper, your celery stalks, your garlic. Some people might take that, chop that all up, and go and sauté it. What happens is it kind of loses, it goes into a mishmash then. It kind of blends
okay.
to the point before it's cooked. By doing this separately, by taking, and you can do this with spray oil. You don't even need to put olive oil on. It's up to you, although olive oil is fine. Each vegetable kind of gets laid out and roasted, and it reduces in its own juice, and it gets intensified. So what happens is your mushrooms get more umami. Your carrots get sweeter. Your celery is sweet. Your red onion comes forward. Your peppers get sweet. Everything then is in and of its own, and then you chop it up. And then you, by the time you mix it, or even if you wanted to sauté it, to get it a little warm again, you're coming in with more of a profile, more of an intensity of flavor versus just putting it all in one pan and hoping it's going to come out. You kind of taste it that way, profile this way. You go, I get mushroom, I get carrot, I get pepper. It's the extra things you do to craft food to make it more delicious. And that's how I run kitchens my whole life, by compartmentalizing ingredients and getting them as tasty as I can for the final pickup on a line. And that's how it translates onto a plate where people go, boy, everything I'm putting in my mouth tastes good versus, that's the way to do it. It's more work, but the payoff is there. And once you get used to working that way as a cook, professional cook, a chef, you don't go back. You stay with flavor. Okay, that's your bottom line. How can I make this taste better? How can I make it, you know, better for my guests or whoever I'm cooking it for.
Well, I
so,
think
yes,
it,
you're right.
It gives more integrity to the ingredient because,
sure.
you don't want the apple to taste like an orange and an orange to taste like an apple. You want,
Exactly.
You want your carrots
to taste like
levels.
A... That's how you
build levels. Roasted carrots are good. That's the best.
Yeah, they're delicious. Roasted or grilled, fantastic. Also pickled. You know, I'm going to be pickling carrots Wednesday. I love pickled carrots, You cut them thin enough.
Yummy.
Oh, you pickle them right.
Man, I'm hungry.
I know. I think we should make some pickles.
I know.
Yes, that's a
okay.
good observation on your point. That's a good point to make. Just like with the pizza, it makes all the difference in the world.
It's a. And if you're gonna, you might as well enjoy your food. Is what I'm trying to say. And it's like it isn't coming out of a frozen dinner. So when
sure.
you talk about a red pepper, I want to make sure because. Like there's all kind of, like here we have, we're in the Southwest. There's, every pepper in the world. So when you're saying red pepper, is it a bell pepper that we're using? It's not like a chili pepper.
That's up to you.
Oh, okay, see?
Bell peppers, piquillo peppers, serrano peppers, poblano, anything you want. That's up to the personal use. On this, I used a bell because I grew up with stuffed cabbage with my grandmother, which was basically ground beef and rice. And that's how she would make it. And then she would do the sweet and sour sauce. You don't have to do it that way. You've got a leaf that you can stuff. So the possibilities are infinite. In all I'm showing you here is technique. And then you put you into the dish.
And so, you put, okay, go ahead.
I was just going to ask quickly, if she didn't want to microwave the cabbage,
right,
could you steam it some other way?
Absolutely. Put in a steamer. Absolutely you can. But I'll tell you, it comes out fantastic in a microwave. And you don't even have to put water in the bottom. It has enough of its own liquid.
So, okay, so you could steam it.
Sorry,
you can do it either way that you want to do
water,
it.
Yes.
A lot of us don't use microwave.
I was just corrected. We have two chefs here. She's very good, you know.
See?
I have to stop telling her how good she is because she's starting to become a pain in my ass now.
Do you guys fight in the kitchen?
Yeah, what happened
in
there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, cool.
But I'll tell you something. I have never tasted food as delicious as Tracy can make it. When I first met her, you know, she was cooking, and I watched her. I mean, she cooks better than some chefs that I know. And she does it with ease, you know, with absolute ease. So, she's very good because she's very connected to what she's cooking. And it changed a lot of the ways I was cooking because let me tell you something. If you can get incredible, incredible, incredible flavor out of doing vegan and gluten-free and using vegetables and really using vinegars, tomatoes, and herbs, it changes everything. You know, this dish even has a great mouthfeel, you know, where you're biting into something and you've got integrity and you've got flavor. But, her head is getting a little big, so I have to take a look
at that.
Oh, come
on now.
Yeah.
Come on now. No, she rocks and she knows how to bake too. But so when you're roasting these vegetables and then you're going to use this stuffing, but you also have quinoa in there, which I think is awesome because that is such a nice big dose of protein, and you don't have to eat half a cow for it, you know?
Right.
So it's
right. You are protein, or if you want to use brown rice, or if you want to use sweet potato that's been cooked off.
Oh.
The quinoa has got great, great, great protein, absolutely. And it's
a good
binder.
And chew factor.
Yes,
absolutely. It's a nice chew factor. You know, we've had it where we've had with eggs. Nancy, like for breakfast, here's your quinoa with eggs, and it's good.
Right.
There's like a balance that comes out of it. And especially if you – I like the ones where you mix your quinoa so it's not all one kind. Because it's like rice. You have the dark one, that purple quinoa stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of got bigger curly cues around them. They have those little, it's like little seedling looking like. You know?
Yes.
Curly cues
or
egg.
You can use couscous, or you can use Israeli couscous, or you can use orzo pasta. You know, I mean, it's infinite with what you can use. White rice has no value.
White rice, and it comes from China. So everybody, like, seriously, you got to look at where your rice comes from, too, because we do have rice that comes out of Louisiana and California, and make sure to try to get the organic that is coming from this country so you know what's in your food, because rice is a big problem. It is.
It
and
is
quinoa
a major
too.
Problem.
All the grains, you got to look, and even look at your oats. Where does that come from? Mm-hmm. Some of them are modified and all that. So we've got to look at those grains because we hear that we need to eat all these grains, and I strongly believe that part of this gluten problem is the our topsoil's not right, our grains are not heritage grains anymore. We barely have our heritage grains, and so we're not even eating the wheat that our bodies, you know, used to know. Our DNA says, hello, I want the wheat that my ancestors ate, not this stuff that has now been modified to, you know, gross. So I think that's part of our problem. I mean, even beer is modified. So, like, you look at, Cargill, which does oil and all this stuff. Well, one of their byproducts happens to be wheat, and so they sell wheat that is genetically modified to breweries. So
that's
part of the
thing.
Yes, you're gluten. You need to go gluten free. So now you have a problem with beer, and then you find out. Well, maybe it's because of that. I'm just saying that's just my observation for the day, and I really get annoyed when beer gets messed with. So that's just wrong.
I don't know that any food product at all should ever be a byproduct of another commercial venture.
No, but it's
that
wrong.
That sounds kind of weird.
So we got to watch what we're buying and stuff and see as local as we can get. But I wanted to ask you about this purple rice stuff. I've never made it right. You could make dye out of it. You know what I'm talking about? I think it's jasmine rice. It's dark.
Mm-hmm.
It's like purple.
I think you need to get a rice cooker.
Yeah, rice cooker. That'd be better. Because it just seems to, you have to cook it for hours and hours, and then the juice comes out of it, and I'm like, oh, I could tie-dye something in it. And we go back to Jerry Garcia.
Put it on your hair.
Okay, I'll see what happens. But that there's some of these grains that I'm like, we don't, as much as I'm ranting and raving about some of these grains, I'm seeing in some of the stores, like when you can go to the grain bins and, you know, things like that, I'm seeing that these different grains are coming into the marketplace from consumers saying, we want, you know, the good stuff. So I do see a change in that. But with that change comes, I don't know what I'm looking at. So I'm going to start sending you photos, Jeff Ivan, and go, what is this?
Yeah.
What do I do?
Right.
Because, you know, what is this purple stuff?
I know.
I don't have the name. I need to go get it. I'll get the name. You know, but it's purple and it's cool. But okay, so you got, let's go back to the recipe. You've got carrots and celery and onions and bell peppers and cloves of garlic, quinoa. Mm. The quinoa you're cooking on the side, right? So that's not something you're not roasting
right.
or toasting.
You're doing this in orchestration. So as your vegetables are in the oven cooking and your cabbage is in the microwave cooking, you're cooking your quinoa, which doesn't take long, and then you're making your sauce. So all of this, it's not like you do one and you stop and you go to the next one, because the dish would take 4 hours. You do this in orchestration, and actually you can get this entire dish together in 20 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Mm. No, that's awesome.
Cool. I want to try this.
Yeah. You multitask.
Yeah. So, and then you got lemon in here, too. Can I ask you about the lemon and the seasonings? Because that's part of this important part, too, is these flavors in there and the sauce. I mean, you're putting lemon with tomato, right? So they both have high acid kind of flavors. Why do you put the lemon in there too?
It brightens up everything and it gives a clarity to the dish. I love the taste of lemon. It'll also act with the sugars in the vegetables. And anytime you have an acidity with a sweetness, that creates a gastric and that brings it to the center of your palate. So it gives you more of a roll. You taste everything with a lot more clarity and integrity. And that little bright shot of lemon can make all the difference in the world.
I read somewhere, I think, or my grandmother might have told me, that when you use lemon with vegetables, it preserves the natural color of the vegetable. Is that
true?
Yes,
it's always done that. That's why when you make a pesto, you know, you put a nice squeeze of lemon in there and it keeps the green. It'll always help keep your color. The acidity works really well that way. Yeah.
Mm.
Plus, the flavor of lemon with a touch of garlic is universal.
Mm. Yeah, I love lemon. It gets me away from cheese. So with your sauce, you've got diced tomatoes in a can. Now, can you make your own? Because I know we're talking, that's the thing. I think a lot of us are stepping aside from microwaves and trying not to do the can thing, but tomatoes in a can, it's hard not to do that. I am seeing BPA-free cans, and you can get organic tomatoes in BPA-free cans. So there is some movement in that. But can we go and make our own tomatoes? Like you were saying, we can do this without the microwave, but can we do the tomato thing by kind of doing our own diced, I mean, like in a crock pot or something, so we can have our own, use our own harvest or...
Sure.
You know, that kind
of thing. Absolutely, why not?
Okay.
You know, but I will tell you one thing about when you're using I'm partial to Italian canned tomatoes. The reason why it's so good is they pick them and can them immediately. So when you're getting these really good, like an Alta Cucina or a San Marzano tomato in a can, they're fabulous. Can you use a fresh tomato? Yeah. Make sure it's ripe, though. Make sure your tomato's ripe and has no yellow on it.
Okay, and I have to go back on the tomatoes because you make a point of saying no salt. So it's not like what we're talking about with the pickles. This is like the no salt.
No salt.
So that's
no
the difference because you're going to season it yourself.
Yeah, they're out there.
Yeah, they're out there.
You got to look for it.
I use them for chili. I use the canned tomatoes for chili. They're organic and everything. I use them for chilies and soups and things. So, you know, but I always go, okay, so what can we do, you know, to get – even closer to the soil. But, you know, these days and age, I don't think we can be Puritans. It's really impossible with the way we all live. It's so fast. You need to do as best you can, but you need to get the can off the shelf sometimes. Sometimes you got to use a microwave. We don't have a microwave. We made this decision.
You can, but
so
you got
to
know what
hard,
you have to know what to look for. For example, in Spain, there was an article written not too long ago some of the most incredible, and the prices were through the roof, incredible canned food. And I'm not talking about preservatives. I'm not talking about loads of salt. Just incredibly canned food, from oysters to anchovies to different kinds of capers to different kinds of pickled vegetables, were in cans or jars in Spain, where some of the top chefs in the world were using them, because they were done where they weren't processed. They were just done incredibly well and then canned without all the chemicals, without all the preservatives, without all the salt. Again, that's Spain. For example,
but,
to look for.
You know, but also I was just going to say that I think the difference there is if those jars and cans that you're looking at in Spain probably won't last 20 years.
No,
like what we
no
do
they're not. That's a good point.
The
and they're not meant to. They're meant to be consumed quickly. Exactly.
Right. And,
but,
and so this
like
is like original
example,
canning, like, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To get no
so
salt
really,
added tomatoes, you have
yeah.
to look for it. So you might be in the supermarket,
yeah.
you'll see tons and tons, and then all of a sudden there'll be maybe two or three cans of the no salt. Why? Because most people don't look for the no salt. They feel, well, if there's not salt in there, it's not going to taste good. So they only put out a few. So you have to really dig and you have to really look for it you know, most supermarkets. It depends where you're shopping. But again, it's like everything else. You must smell, touch, feel, taste, and look at labels.
Yeah, read the labels. Yeah, so, okay, no salt. Dice tomatoes or make your own and make sure they're, if you're making your own, you're doing it from ripe. You have tomato paste and, which is, you've got like, what, 2 14-ounce cans of diced tomatoes, but there's 4 ounces of tomato paste. Because if you do it the other way, I've made that mistake. Tomato paste is like super concentrated and it is not the same as tomato puree, tomato sauce.
No.
It is not the same. I'm just saying. There's a difference.
Yes.
Because I've done that. And then you've got 1/4 cup of apple cider vinegar and then 1 tablespoon of brown sugar. What is it about the brown sugar and the apple cider, man? There's something.
It's yummy.
There's like a, it's meant to be.
It's a simpatico. It's a simpatico.
Mm.
They work really well together. You know, the brown sugar and the apple cider vinegar, and then you have the cumin and the smoked paprika.
Ooh.
It gives this very lightly sweet, smoky, delicate flavor. And then you hit it in the background with just a touch of sriracha and a little bit of sweet chili. Now, you don't have to use sriracha. You can use jalapenos. You can use habaneros. You can use Thai chilies, anything you want. But this sauce is all done with balance. It's got to be done that the time you get some of the sauce in your mouth, you're getting a roll. Not just, oh, this is like tomato sauce. This is very boring. You know, so you got to work your sauce.
Work it. And I like that you got, like, the smoked paprika and the cumin.
Yeah,
I think cumin is, like, one of the most important things, like, that anyone could have in their kitchen. But it's sriracha and sweet chili, those two together. I mean, you got lime, you got put the lime in the coconut. You got everything in this. This is, well, not everything, but it's, like, balance. Like, It seems like your diced tomatoes, your tomato paste, like you're talking about these ingredients that they, salt and pepper. So it's a list of married ingredients. It's like a marriage of good food in here for the sauce. So that's an interesting thing. It's science. So, wow. So you, when you make the sauce, you put it in a blender and then do you heat it up?
No, I don't cook it. I cook it in the oven. With the stuffed cabbage, I don't heat it.
Really?
I cook the sauce and then let it cook once. Yeah, absolutely. I learned that from really great pizza places in New York. They'll do a certain sauce, and they won't, you know, they don't heat it because they don't want to heat it again. They do it once on the pizza. That's how I do this. I heat it once. That's it. I don't want to heat it and then bring it back and heat it again. Now, will it work the next day? Absolutely. When you reheat it, you don't have a problem, but it's pretty delicate, so I don't want to, like, it's like a cream soup. You don't want to keep heating a cream soup again and again and again.
No, it gets that weird skin.
So you just want to be careful with it.
Okay, so Chef Ivan, good recipe. We're going to try it. I'll let you know. if Nancy survives anything that I do. But she's liking my pizzas better because of you. So thank you for
good.
That.
Yes. Thank you.
Always good. Well, you know, it's an important thing. Pizza is a meal of the gods, and it should taste really good. But it's like, and I do go, damn it, I have to do this extra work, and it's all Chef Hyman's fault. And then we
yes.
eat, and we're like, oh, this is really good. But I enjoy, there is something, you know, I'm teasing you, but there is something about taking your time in the kitchen that it's, it, you know, a lot of us have a problem meditating, you know, especially people like me that they're like uppity. But when you cook, there is something meditative about it. Like
it
you're
is.
Talking about
it's
this
true.
Orchestration of how to make things roll. There is this meditation, and I think that the more we cook, the happier we'll all be, not just for what we're eating and the health factors, but there is a mindfulness to cooking that calms us all
it's
down.
It's cheaper, too, if
mm-hmm.
you make it yourself.
Yeah.
If you make your own pickles, it's less than like half of the price of the salt pickles you get in jars.
Yeah,
the
and
store.
They put dye in those things, too. They put dye
yeah.
in pickles.
The biggest thing,
do you
the biggest
think,
thing about cooking The biggest thing about cooking is you go into a zone, and when you're cooking, you're usually cooking for people. So what you want to do is you want to make it as delicious as you can, and that means you need to craft it, and it needs to come through as almost like a feel, okay, because you're really thinking about the people you're cooking it for. For example, you're doing your mushrooms, your pizza. Next time what you can do is cut your mushrooms into however you want to cut them and take 7 or 8 cloves of garlic and just cover them with a little bit of olive oil, put them in a blender, and spin it till it looks like yogurt. And when your mushrooms are starting to caramelize, throw a little bit of that garlic puree in there and mix it in about 30 seconds.
Ooh.
It'll turn brown and cook out. And then deglaze if you want with a little bit of whatever. If you want to do a touch of wine, if you want to do a touch of Pernod, a little bit of, now all of a sudden you've taken mushrooms and garlic that are going to go on a pizza, which you can cook again, and it's going to take your final product to a place that a raw mushroom never would have taken it. But you got to do the work, you know, and
yeah.
a lot of us as cooks, okay, all right, you know, oh, this is going to be 4 hours, and I've got to take the cookbook out. Once you really start to follow, and that's why I do CelebrityCafe.com. This is what we teach. This is all on CelebrityCafe.com. It teaches you how to do this. And once you start to do this, it's how you breathe, and everything you'll start to make will start to be a lot more delicious. Because in all the years of training as a chef, I always would be like, what can I do to change that? What can I do to make it a little better? You learn from your mistakes, and that's how you start to dial in truly, truly great flavor. And that's what eating is about, truly, truly great flavor, you know, and knowing how to shop and be being mindful
yeah.
of what you're doing.
Do you think that maybe perhaps you and Tracy would ever produce a cooking book,
a cookbook?
Yeah?
Yes. Yes,
cool.
We're working on
Yay.
It, actually. Yes, we're working
Yay.
On it. Yeah, for sure.
Awesome.
Because I'm about sharing, you know, and the whole idea is if you follow recipes, then we should all be Jacques Pepin, correct? If you follow the recipe exactly, but it doesn't work out that way. So what's missing? There's something that's missing
technique.
When you're teaching people how to cook. Technique and something else. There's something missing that a lot of people don't talk about. Part of what we
it's
talked about today, going the extra step, thinking about it, mouthfeel, umami, different things, the how-tos, all of it. They don't teach that in a cookbook that comes from somewhere else.
Exactly. There is that step, and then but it becomes habit. It's just like, you know, in our own daily life, it's like you create this new habit, and the more you practice it, the easier it becomes, and it becomes part of that energy flow. It's a positive, cool thing. So it's like the first few times me cooking the ingredients for the pizza, because we eat a lot of pizza here, and the first few times I'm like, dang, what am I doing? Because I don't normally do a lot of the stove. I'm salad and sad. I'm that kind of person. And I haven't cooked before the tour. So suddenly I'm like, oh, God, what am I going to do? I'm going to burn the house down. I can make pizza. I can understand that. But then going the step, it made me get back into, okay, how am I even going to saute something? Because I forgot. But it is like riding a bike for some, those who know how to ride a bicycle. And it was like, okay, learn how much. Don't do too much oil. You don't need it in this kind of pan. You need this here, whatever. But once you get it, you learn it, and then you practice, then it's not a problem. Then it's just this.
No, and it's
it becomes part of it.
Yes, it rotates in your mind. When I was training cooks throughout my career, I'd bring the staff into the walk, and let's say I had a couple of watermelons, really sweet watermelons that I needed to use. Every cook, every single cook, so there might be 8 or 9 cooks, had to give me 10 things to do with that watermelon right then and there. Every single cook had to rethink everything. There's an infinite things to do with watermelons. So when you're training staffs in professional restaurants and their minds are working like that, that's when kitchens become magical, magical places, and that magic transfers to the customer because all of a sudden they're having watermelon, or they're having these different vegetables, or this fish done in a way that they've never experienced before, but it's got to work. In other words, you're not putting peanut butter on watermelon, but there are things that you can do because some things work and some things don't. If you call everything art, then nothing is art, okay? It's got to work. It's got to be plated where it's attractive, and it's got to be delicious, and it's got to have mouthfeel, and it has to have integrity. And when you operate that way, that's why a lot of chefs go like mad. You know, years ago I worked with Charlie Trotter on a cooking class, and he passed away a few years ago. And he was a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant chef, but he drove himself insane. You know, I mean, he just, because God forbid something wasn't exact. You don't have to engineer anything that much to perfection.
Mm.
What you're dealing with is delicious. And a lot of times cook what you think people are going to want to eat, you know, and throw your ego out the window. Because either you can cook or you can't cook. No in between. It's like being a little pregnant.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, then people go, oh, are you pregnant? You go, no, I just ate too much this morning. Shut up. You know, and people should never congratulate people on being pregnant if you don't know if they're pregnant or not. I'm just saying.
Yes.
So,
that's a big whoopsie.
Yeah. Yeah. When that half-pregnant look comes about, and you don't know, really. And you go, oh, congratulations. They're like, on what?
No, I just drank a modified beer.
That's right. Yeah. I drank a modified beer from Cargill. Thank you. Chef Ivan, I think you're really right. You know, Nancy, I call her the omelet queen. And she, when I was doing the pizza for the first time, Nancy's like, it's what I do for the omelets. I don't throw the ingredients in the egg without cooking them. And she cooks them all separately. So she always has onion and garlic and puts them, and then she uses, you know, really, it's like the canned tomato thing. Here it is, but jarred stuff. And, you know, so it's as best as you can because everyone's moving as fast as we can. But there's this omelet thing that she does. And through the years, this omelet has changed depending on where we are and what we're doing. But this omelet comes out.
Or what pan I have.
Yeah, what pan, you know, especially on the road. We stay in a lot of vacation rental homes, and you never know what you've got. But this should do, like, onions and garlic and things. But, like, she takes zucchini, and she cooks it a little bit in there, but it's like you have this crunch, but they're still cooked. But you have this crunch inside your omelet, goat cheese for me, different cheese for her. But the topping, now this is the thing. She takes it to the end degree. You'll get your omelet. Okay, it's closed. It's got the stuffing inside. It tastes really good, but she's got the crunch of the zucchini in there. So, like, you've got your mushroom.
It has to go in last.
If it doesn't crunch, it's going to suck.
Yeah.
And then she tops it with a little bit of the sauce. She puts avocados on the side, but she does this whole little bit of cheese sprinkles on top. I mean, now it's like a full-on presentation. So when you sit down for your champagne brunch, this is what happens on Sundays here.
Yeah.
You sit down, and yes, we open the champagne early because how could you not? She's made this. You're going to sit down, and it's like there is a mindfulness to the eater because the mindfulness of the cook who's prepared it. If it's presented well like that, you're not going to sit there and, you know, start playing with your food, even though we're like that. There's this different mentality you have of eating and respect from doing that. So I agree with you about these extra steps. I think it creates a flow of human relations.
Well,
even.
There's several things happening at once in the kitchen in order to do that. So now, and I thank you for that, Lisa. I'm glad you appreciate it. But I would like to say this. Chef Ivan, when you talk about driving yourself crazy, right? There's a part, you know, when I'm trying to flip the omelet, put the sauce on, get this, get the next one going, that somehow Lisa's got this great timing to walk up and start talking to me about something on Instagram, and she doesn't understand why I'm not hearing, and I'm not.
Right, yes.
And she'll say, I don't hear. See?
Right. Now, put
so
yourself in the position of a professional cook in a really, really good breakfast menu that's doing 300 and 400 omelets a morning, and all of them are different. All of them have different ingredients, and they're expected to put that omelet up exactly the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
That's where you cross into professional cooking, and that's where really great cooks become really great chefs, because you want to know something, it's real easy to say, just get it on the plate and get it out of here. But if you have somebody that is cooking it the way you're cooking it, that cares that much, that's the kind of people that chefs want in their kitchens, and that's the kind of people that will make it in the industry and always really be professional and understand what cooking is. Because how many times have you gone to a restaurant where it's been like, ugh,
yeah.
a lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it's true. And then there's not only are the chefs cooking these all individually and everything's going
that's
in this orchestration,
crazy.
Then the waitress comes in, if you didn't fix that, they changed their mind. They want this. And then that's when you want to throw the plate across the room.
Yeah.
You know, so there's when people talk about temperaments of chefs, I'm going, you're in a kitchen that is hotter than hell, and you've got people coming in and out telling you what to do.
Uh-uh.
Cash registers sounds going. Everybody is, and customers change their order. They mess with it, too. There's that two-way street of that. I'm just saying, when you order something and change your mind and it's already going to the under the chef's thing, deal with it.
I have to ask you this, because now just the scenario that you're talking about. Now, as a chef, if you get an order of something, like I would make a really bad chef from the standpoint, if somebody gave me an order for something that I personally wouldn't eat, I probably wouldn't cook. go get a different order.
Yeah, what
if somebody gave you a combination of something that you felt was just gross, would you'd still produce it?
There are some things, for example, there are some things I wouldn't even have on the menu. I cook foie gras for years. You never find it on the menu. I wouldn't do veal. There's some things I won't even carry on a menu. So everything that I have in the kitchen, I know that I'm very, very comfortable with. I'm not going to have baby suckling pig. I'm not going to do any kind of food that had to suffer before it was, slaughtered for consumption. Not going to do that kind of stuff. So I protect, the fact that foie gras came back in California was a real mistake, I think, in my opinion. That's a whole other show. So I pretty much insulate myself with things that I'm not going to use. Bob veal, really, baby veal, and just a lot of things. But is a whole other show.
Yeah, that's true. That's like, we should do that. We'd do a whole thing on the integrity of being your chef's integrity and the integrity of the ingredients, like you're talking about. Ooh, we do. I have a whole thing on that. So, yeah, we'll deal with that. But it's time for champagne toast, Chef Ivan.
My toast is sitting at the dinner table, whether you're 2 people, whether you're 10 people, and you can only do it on Sunday whenever, sitting at the dinner table, talking about the food and the wine that you're possibly drinking, speaking about, events in the world, communicating, being around the table and enjoying food and sitting for 2 hours and discussing things and planning the next meal versus drive-thrus, takeouts, and delivery. Come on.
Are you actually speaking to the idea of eating food without watching television?
That's another thing. It's funny you said that, Tracy Ryan. Turn your cell phone off. Here's a perfect example. Somebody gets the home delivery service. They're either cooking it or it's been delivered, and they're watching TV, and they're on their cell phone at the table. You know what? The food is, you're not going to enjoy anything. So you got to stop, because there's something called teleological evolution, and that's evolution going in reverse, where we got bigger, we're going to start to get smaller. So our heads are going to grow bigger, and our hands are going to grow a little smaller, and our bodies are certainly going to grow smaller, because no one really walks around, and, everything's delivered, and groceries are delivered. So it's It's evolution in reverse. Just put a stop to things. And you know what? Sit there and go, Jesus Christ, this tomato. Where'd you get this tomato from? Or maybe you grew it. Or this pasta, you know, with a little bit of, herbs and some fresh goat cheese. What kind of goat cheese is this? Or the toast, like you're making omelets, right? It's important to have the right kind of toast. It's important to have the right kind of butter. Maybe you're using an echarée butter. Maybe you're using a salted butter. Maybe you made your own butter with a little bit of whatever in it. And it's like, wow, this butter. Or, wow, you made these pancakes and the syrup is unbelievable. What did you infuse it with? That takes work. It's something, it's a dying art. It's what we're moving away from. And this isn't being, you know, this isn't thinking, wow, I'm an old fart. These are the ways of the world. Some stuff that changes is not good. And the way we're eating, we're one of the most obese nations in the world, is not good. Plain and simple.
And it's not fun either.
I have to tell you, when I make scrambled eggs, I melt goat cheese into the egg mixture instead of using milk.
Yay.
And it comes out nice.
I keep telling Dr. Jackie that there's nothing wrong with me eating goat cheese. It's not like other dairy.
Well, you know, her point is how much cheese.
Yeah, I know.
Whether it's goat or cow.
Yeah, I know. It's the thing about goat cheese it's a goat
salty.
Thing.
Salty.
Not as salt. No, it depends. Yeah. The fresher, the less saltier. It's the cheese. It all depends. Mm. But there's this thing that happens even when it gets a little heated.
You were raised on goat milk.
I love goat cheese. But Chef Ivan, I love your toast. And I think we need to have a conversation on integrity in food. Let's do it. Let's do that.
I like evolution in reverse because I think you're talking about Congress.
And I think the picture I have
now
is like we are going to be so.
Jesus Christ, that's a whole other show. Don't ever get me on that one. You're not going to like what you're going to hear.
No, we don't start us all on that. But because that is like a whole rants and rave show. I mean, but the more we go backwards in evolution, the more like alien babies we're going to look like. That's that thing, man. I don't want those aliens. We're going to look like cockroaches, man. I'm telling you.
I told you.
Nobody talks to each other. Nobody talks. It's all tech. There's no conversation now with young people. They text. No one talks. You know, it used to be like, you don't sound right. I could hear in your voice, or you might sound a little sick, or you sound like you have anxiety. That's all gone. You're on a text. You have no idea what's going on. Talk to people. Buy food.
Yeah,
go shopping. Make a meal.
Words.
Right?
I would like to go back to martini lunches in business. I think a lot
you and,
more
you
business.
And me both. Right.
I think martini lunch, that needs to come back. Who stopped that?
Well,
whoever stopped that was wrong.
Well, and I would like to get rid of the emojis, and I would like it if you're going to text or email that you spell things so the person on the other side actually knows what the heck you're trying to say. Because quite frankly, talk about room for misunderstanding.
Well, I know, because Nancy makes up her own things. When people start abbreviating everything, she goes, "You mean that? Oh-ho." And then they're like, "No, that's not what I meant." She goes, "Well, for me, this is what it means." And that's that. And you're going to say that to Nancy? Uh-oh. So, like, things, we need to go back to talking, sharing bread, breaking bread together, having a glass of wine, martini lunches, dinners.
Yes.
You know, and that's the thing.
The
in the business world. Good God, if you call somebody in the business world now, it's like, oh, my God, somebody called. You're either a RoboCop or a RoboCop.
Yep. That's why we used to employ receptionists to answer the phone. And when you're in business, the one thing you always wanted was the phone to ring.
Yes.
Because it meant dollars.
Yeah.
Now it's like, don't phone me.
Yeah, even websites, please don't call. You go, how many business websites don't even have their phone number on it?
Well, here's a big rent that just got touched off.
Okay, that's a whole other show. Chef Ivan, thanks so much for joining us. Give Tracy and Pickle a hug.
We will. You take care, guys.
Awesome.
Take care. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Everyone, again, Chef Ivan's recipes, go to blendradioandtv.com and just look in the expert department.